Dan Diamond, Renu Ryasam, hello, hello.
Hi there.
Hey, Jeremy.
So, Renu, where are you right now?
I am in Austin, Texas.
And when did you last get a haircut?
Well, I actually got a haircut a couple weeks ago when Texas started opening up hair salons and other things very slowly.
All right, so a fresh cut. Dan, where are you right now?
I am in Washington, D.C., where I am being crushed under my mop of hair to get ahead of your next question.
So at this point, you could probably audition successfully and get a part in a community theater production of the musical Hair.
It's a fallback career if this public health reporting gig doesn't work out.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today, health reporter Renu Ryasam and health policy reporter by day, future community theater star by night, Dan Diamond, on how different regions are lifting coronavirus restrictions in different ways and what that means for the nation as it tries to emerge from the pandemic. Fly in the breeze and get caught in the trees. Give a home to the fleas in my hair. A home for fleas. Well, I think both of your hair situations really give a glimpse into sort of like the two realities emerging in America right now. And I want to get into all of that. But I think it's sort of worth taking stock first of where we are right now in this pandemic. And we've just passed a grim milestone, 100,000 American deaths linked to coronavirus. Dan, how does this number and where we are right now compare to where the Trump administration thought we would be, where they predicted we would be?
Jeremy, it depends on which prediction you choose. In the early days of this outbreak, if you go back to February, go into March, the Trump administration largely was dismissing the virus before starting to take it seriously, after seeing some of these projections that epidemiologists, virologists were starting to bring to the White House. President Trump on April 10th.
We're talking about death.
About 6 weeks ago, said that the death toll could be as low as 55,000.
Maybe it would have been 2 million people died instead of whatever that final number will be, which could be 60, could be 70, could be 75, could be 55.
That has steadily been ratcheted up. By May 8th, so 2 or 3 weeks ago, the president said that the death toll could be as high as 110,000 deaths, or maybe higher. It's important to remember, the White House, the president, are not making these predictions in a vacuum. There are influential modelers, disease modelers, who are bringing their projections to the White House, who are publishing these projections widely. And the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation on Tuesday, they're quite influential here, again lowered their death projections from 143,000 or so to about 131,000. What that means is that analysts aren't seeing the spike that they expected to as some states began to open up.
Well, Renu, you're in Texas, which is one of the states that was well ahead of other places with reopening. It started reopening parts of its economy weeks ago, which was a while before public health experts, you know, said it was a good idea to do anything like that. I'm curious, what's it like for you being a health reporter and living in the middle of a state that's essentially bucked the health advice of experts?
So I think, you know, Texas started opening a couple of weeks ago. We haven't moved as quickly as Georgia or South Dakota, which has been open all along. I think in the past week, I've seen a real shift, even in a place like Austin, where there's a lot of thoughtfulness about how to implement these guidelines. My husband and I, our routine hasn't changed too much. We end up going out once a week on Saturdays to get takeout with our kids, and we were driving around and we saw a lot of packed restaurant patios. A friend of mine told me she went to a restaurant to get takeout and the inside was really crowded. And so people's behaviors are starting to change. I think some of that is the top-down guidelines that they're getting that are permitting some more of those freedoms. And then some of it is just quarantine fatigue, which we've read a lot about and I think we're all feeling right now as well.
I mentioned, you know, that experts warned against the reopening early that we saw in Texas and some other states. Do you think at this point they were wrong about Texas reopening too soon? I mean, have we seen anything like a spike in cases because of this?
We haven't yet. And I think a lot of that is because there's a data lag. So, you know, if I'm exposed to the virus today, it may be a week or so or 2 weeks before I show symptoms, and then another few days or a week before I can get a test and get a result back. And then it may even take longer before the state logs that as a positive case. And then if you're looking at death data, it's going to take another couple of weeks before a person who becomes infected today passes away, if that were to be the case. And we're seeing a lot of different states struggle with how they're reporting some of this data. Either they're not performing enough tests to really capture it accurately. There's been a mixing of what types of tests that they're looking at. And some of that is sloppiness, and some of that could be intentional as a way to make their numbers look better. We don't know yet. And so I think as we move forward, it's going to be really tough to tease out cause and effect in the data because there's some real questions about data reliability. Mm.
Dan, you mentioned you're in D.C. I'm also here in the Capitol, which has been under fairly tight restrictions. But I'm curious, when you hear Renu talk about Texas, how would you say things are different here when it comes to how people are thinking about reopening the nation's capital?
It continues to be a hotspot. Tony Fauci, the infectious disease specialist, I know was warning lawmakers privately last week that the cases in Washington were a concern and that this was an area of the country that had not seemed to get the outbreak under control. Trump officials like Deborah Birx, the top expert advising the coronavirus response in the White House, have said similar things publicly. But Washington officials are moving to start rolling back local restrictions this week. And this comes after them moving the dial on what they needed to see to make that determination. For instance, local health officials in D.C. said they wanted to see 14 days of steady decline in new coronavirus cases before opening the city back up. 14 days of straight decline. That did not happen. Cases went up over this past weekend, but instead of starting the 14-day count all over again, local officials just pulled out the days that showed the spike so they could say that the city was still showing a trend of downward cases and could reopen. This is like me saying that I got an A-plus on my math test if you just take out the five answers I got wrong.
Well, I mean, we were talking earlier about some of the models, and obviously they're dependent on, you know, how much people are following restriction measures or if there are restriction measures in place. I mean, do you think places like D.C. lifting restrictions, is that bad news for some of these models?
Well, again, it depends on what data we have available to see. And from some of the states like Texas that have lifted restrictions and not seen a massive spike in new cases, that gives virologists hope that people are practicing behaviors on their own that are helping slow the virus spread. I think what makes DC especially challenging is, unlike some of these other regions, the virus continues to be very hot here.
And I think the big difference you're seeing in places like Texas and places like DC is, you know, public transit usage here is really low. We have a train that no one ever uses, and the buses are never very full. And I think in a place like DC and places like New York, public transit usage is really high, and those can be a real hotspot for spreading the virus. And I think in DC, for a lot of low-income people who don't have the option of sheltering in place, I think the lifting of the restrictions could be even tougher on them as if the virus continues to spread and they don't have the option of going back indoors. And I guess that's true everywhere. That's true in Austin as well. Mm.
Well, because of those differences between cities, between states, do you think that means sort of what we've been seeing, this patchwork of different reopening plans? Do you think that makes sense, Dan? Like, what are health officials saying about this?
This has been the argument that the Trump administration has been making for weeks, Jeremy, that the federal government cannot mandate a national strategy because the outbreak is so different. The needs are so varied depending on the community. I think there is some truth to that. The outbreak in Alabama, where cases are going up, is very different, seemingly, than the outbreak in Florida, at least for right now, even though they're generally in the same part of the country. But the lack of national coordination, national leadership, means that leaders, politicians, voters, they can pick and choose what messages they want to hear. And that makes the United States very different than other countries that have been much more unified in what the measures would be, what messages were coming from the nation's leadership, even how supplies and testing was being distributed around the country. So this is the state of affairs, not just for now, but likely for the weeks and months to come. At the same time, it is a very different state of affairs than we're seeing in peer nations that have a much more unified response led by top officials.
Dan Diamond, Renu Ryasim, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Also today, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has delayed a vote to reauthorize key parts of the Foreign Surveillance Intelligence Act after Republicans and some Democrats opposed the measure at the 11th hour. Lawmakers had initially planned to vote yesterday on a bipartisan amendment to restrict when the FBI can collect Americans' internet histories. The legislation had broad support in the Senate, but faced opposition from the Justice Department and President Trump, who tweeted last night, "If the bill is passed on the House floor, I will quickly veto it." Officials in the Justice Department say the administration dropped its support due to a provision mandating accuracy of warrant applications, another requiring the FBI to share all relevant information about a particular surveillance target with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, and another that would give outside lawyers more access to intelligence. The measure also lacks support from some progressive Democrats. Hundreds of members of the House flew into Washington amid the pandemic for the vote. It's now unclear what's next for the bill today. And President Trump is set to sign an executive order today that takes aim at social media companies, but it's not clear what exactly the order will include. The move comes as Trump and his allies are ramping up allegations that companies like Twitter and Facebook are stifling voices on the right, after Twitter put fact-checking notices on two of the president's tweets that made unsubstantiated claims about voter fraud. The announcement has revived fears within the tech industry that the Trump administration will target a statute from 1996 that protects companies from lawsuits and gives them broad leeway to remove material they consider objectionable. An official familiar with the order described it as broad and high level and said it would address complaints that online platforms are deceiving people by picking and choosing what content to allow instead of acting as neutral moderators, but cautioned that the order's language was likely to change. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts and check out some of our other shows like Nerdcast, Pulse Check, Women Rule, and Politico Energy. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.